This episode of the Bright But Very Sensitive podcast comes with a content note. In this episode, I will discuss briefly the idea of suicidal ideation. We will not go into detail. There will be no discussion of means or intent. However, we will discuss what it's like to live with chronic suicidal ideation and some of the ways that that can manifest. So if this is not a good time for you to hear about this information, please feel free to skip this episode. Hi there, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Bright But Very Sensitive podcast. Thank you all so much for being here. We're on our seventh episode, I think, and this is the most vulnerable and open and honest and the best I've felt about creating online for a long time. Not to say that I was very resentful of, being on socials. I actually really enjoyed it a lot of the time, but there's something about this podcast that has been so freeing, and so many of you have been so supportive of it. So thank you. If you're enjoying the podcast, please feel free to email me. My email is megan@theneurocuriosityclub.com. Let me know what you think of the podcast. I would love to hear your thoughts. If you have things you want me to talk about, I would love to hear your suggestions. But I just wanted to say thank you for holding me in this way and holding space for me in this way and listening to what I have to say. It's really honestly been very healing. So speaking of being vulnerable and real and honest, I have something super embarrassing to share with you today that we're going to talk about because I think more people need to be talking about it. And that is our need for attention. I think so often the need for attention is vilified. It is treated like you're an attention-seeking, bad, manipulative person. And that is just not how any of this works. Attention is a basic human need. We all need attention, and especially those of us who underwent physical neglect, emotional neglect, social neglect, or bullying, we need positive attention. And honestly, so many of us will settle for negative attention. I know we talk about that, or at least I talk about that a lot I have a child who is 5 now, and he sometimes will settle for negative attention, and it feels so baffling. I'm like, wouldn't you rather get positive attention? But anyway, let me rewind before I dive into my 5-year-old. And plus, we don't need to talk about him too terribly much. I don't like talking about my kids too much online just because they can't consent to being as open and honest online as I am. So the reason I'm thinking about all of this right now is because I was scrolling through Instagram the other day, which you all know that I don't create on social media anymore except for YouTube. And I generally haven't been on socials, but I felt like I was falling behind on the news because I was getting a lot of my news from social media. And so I was like, well, I do need to see what's going on, so I'll hop on socials. It took, maybe 5 minutes for me to get completely and fully triggered. Totally activated. And it got to the point where what happened was I saw somebody who was receiving hate comments, and my heart went out to them because I know how much that sucks. But at the same time, there was this horrible little green jealous monster inside of me that was like, but that should be me. I should be the one creating compelling content that I don't care if it's negative attention, at least it's attention. And at one point, while I was triggered, I had closed Instagram, but I was just lying there on the couch trying to regulate. And I was trying to get in touch with my emotions, with my thoughts, what is coming up for me right now? And if I am totally honest, what was coming up for me in that moment was a small child just screaming, give me attention. I want attention. Please, I need it. I need the attention. Give me the attention. And that feels so embarrassing to me. It feels so embarrassing to be like, I want attention even if it's hate. I miss it. I miss getting hate comments. I miss, which is so goofy. Like, let's just be honest. That is ridiculous. Like, come on. That is the whole reason I left, to try to protect my peace and try to, like, just not expose myself to that anymore. And I think there's an interesting sub discussion that we could have here about how it is possible to make decisions that you feel complicated feelings about and have it still be the right decision. Like, yes, my need for attention is still so great. And there is a part of me that misses all of the drama and the attention that social media garnered for me. And that doesn't mean that walking away wasn't also the right decision, because it was. So anyway, so I am lying on the couch with my little gremlin child screaming about wanting attention. And at first, I'll admit, I was really annoyed. I was like, oh my gosh, like, get over yourself. You don't need attention. Like, you're an attention whore. Like, that's a really mean one that I have used against myself my whole life. Literally, as long as I can remember, as long as I knew what the word whore meant, attention whore was a really, really, really mean way I have always talked to myself. And I think this is the direct result of experiencing emotional neglect growing up, because I was very much taught that attention is not a need. It is not a need. It is you being whiny and needy and gross, frankly. And I didn't really receive the message that it was manipulative necessarily, but I did receive the message that it was bad to want attention of any kind, positive, negative, or otherwise. So that's what happened. And it's so interesting to me, because I really, after I got over the whole, like, oh my gosh, what's wrong with you? Shut up. Like, all of the mean reaction that I had underneath that, I was like, okay, all right. Shame has never worked before. So instead, I'm going to listen to you. What do you need? And again, this little child inside of me was just like, attention, attention, please. I just need attention, please. And they were so desperate and frankly scared and so upset. And so I was like, okay, you've got it. You've got my attention. I see you. And then later that night, you know, I had calmed down quite a bit and everything was, I wasn't actively triggered or anything anymore, but I was still dealing with the after effects and whatnot, right? After the kids had gone to bed, I just really intentionally connected with my husband. And I was like, I didn't necessarily say, hey, can you give me attention? But I like bugged him while he was playing his video game. I was like, hey, let me read to you from my book because I really like this passage. Or, hey, what are our plans for Christmas this year? Or, hey, like, I just kept, you know, starting conversation, which, by the way, he doesn't mind at all. But there are definitely nights where I just do my own thing, he does his own thing, and we don't necessarily chat all that much. But this was one of those nights where I was like, I need attention and connection, and I need it from someone I trust and someone I love, which is obviously my husband. And it really, really helped. I'll be honest, it really helped just connecting with him in that way and feeling seen by him. I'm reading a book called The Midnight Library by Matt Haig. And it's such a good book, by the way. No spoilers, I'm not done yet. But I won't give spoilers, but it's such a good book and it's deeply personal for me. This is not a spoiler. This is within the first like 50 pages, but the book does deal with issues of suicide. And I have dealt with chronic suicidal ideation for years now. And I've never had anyone else be able to articulate my particular experience with suicidal ideation, which is that so many people, when someone is suicidal, will say stuff like, you know, it gets better, life is worth living, all of that stuff. And like, that has never helped me very much, because I know life gets better and I know that life is worth living. Like, I have such a good life. I love my life, honestly. Like, I'm not even when I'm depressed, I look around and I'm like, damn, I am lucky, you know? That's not the problem. The problem is me. No matter how good my life gets, I'll always be in it. And I am the problem. And this is where the whole shame-based personality comes from, and lots of trauma and all of that good stuff. But this book actually addresses that. And I've never, ever heard anybody else talk about suicidal ideation this way. And I love it. And so I was very hesitant to share this with my husband because he loves me very much. So talking about suicidal ideation makes him very sad. So I was hesitant to share it with him, but it meant so much to me. And I needed attention that day really badly. And so I was like, okay, we're gonna talk about this. And I felt so seen and heard and held. And, you know, he doesn't always know what to say, but you don't have to know what to say. If someone comes to you and they're expressing not active suicidal ideation, because that's much fuzzier and harder to deal with, but like having had those types of thoughts in the past, you don't have to say the perfect thing. You don't have to have the perfect response or anything. Just being there. Honestly, my husband said something along the lines of like, I'm really glad that you feel seen by this book. I'm really glad that this book means so much to you and that, you know, you finally feel like somebody gets it. He's not saying he gets it. He's not saying that, you know, he just saw how much the book meant to me, and that meant a lot to me. So anyway, that's a whole side note about the Midnight Library. It's very good. Highly recommend, at least so far. Like I said, I'm about halfway through. So I reached out for attention and connection, and I think this is what I'm going to do from now on. Whenever I feel tempted to get on socials, I'm going to like actually physically call a friend, maybe text, but I'm going to try to call. And when I, you know, hear that sad, upset child inside me screaming for attention, we are going to do some freaking trauma work. Okay. We are going to address some of this past neglect that I am holding on to and has shaped me. Because it's not always that you're holding on to your past, right? Sometimes your past just shapes. It's like if you're baking a cookie in the oven and you put like a rolling pin right next to the cookie, it can't expand that direction. And then once you take the cookie out of the oven, it hardens and it's like really difficult to reshape the cookie without breaking it. And that's what I feel like. I would love to reshape so that I can expand into love instead of being so fucking scared of it. But I don't know. I think I have in some ways, you know, like with my husband especially, but I don't know. I just think it's also okay to acknowledge the ways we've been shaped without, you know, victim blaming and like making it my fault for being a child who wanted to be loved. And granted, to be fair, I was absolutely loved. I just didn't always receive love the way that I needed it or the way I wanted it. And have you ever heard the metaphor? It's usually used to describe folks who have borderline personality disorder, which I don't have, but I do have some traits. And it's this idea that a lot of people with BPD are very, very sensitive people who were born into a very insensitive family. And they are like a daisy in a rose garden, in the sense that daisies and roses are both beautiful, amazing flowers, but they have very different soil needs, very different water needs. And it's basically the story of the ugly duckling. You know, you grow up around a bunch of cute little ducklings and you're this like awkward swan who has not come into herself yet. And it's like, you just feel very rejected, even if no one rejects you in like a big overt kind of way. A lot of my trauma, at least, was very, I don't know, I don't even want to say covert, because that feels like they're trying to hide it, which no one was. It was just, death by a thousand paper cuts, you know? So, which I've talked about on this podcast before, and I'm not trying to trauma dump here. I just think that that metaphor about the daisy in the rose garden is so powerful. It's always made me feel very seen. And I was always given what people thought I needed. I was not always given what I actually needed. And I'm realizing that one of those things that I actually needed and still need is attention. Yeah, I need attention. And I think we need to talk more about attention as a support need, as an accommodation, as a human need. Because we can provide all the accommodations in the world, but if you don't provide the attention needed and the care needed to actually lovingly provide those accommodations, then the accommodations don't help as much. Like, if someone accommodates you begrudgingly every time, that is not the same as someone enthusiastically accommodating you. And I feel like attention is often the difference there. I could be wrong, or it could just be me that experiences it that way. But I just think attention is something we've been told is rude or self-centered or vain, you know, to need or to want. Honestly, just to want. No one needs attention. Like, that's the vibe, at least where I live. That's how everybody kind of feels. No one needs attention, but, you know, vain, stupid people want it. No, that's so not true. We all need attention desperately and need to be seen and heard and held. So I'm trying to figure out how to end this exactly. I don't know. I don't have any like super duper advice except like ask your friends and family for attention sometimes. You're allowed to need that. And I hope my vulnerability around this topic has, I don't know, maybe helped you feel a little less bad about needing attention yourself. So that's all I've got for you today. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.